horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From the event center at the Horseshoe, Las Vegas, NHC 2023, day two. And we are well underway. There's been one mandatory. It came at Tampa, and actually a decent enough price, a horse that was pretty obvious as a turnback, and ended up at 7-2. We don't have any change right at the top of the leaderboard in terms of Doc Bustani, the Lafayette, Louisiana dentist, 72 years old, who joined us yesterday as we wrapped up. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy to have you back with us for the big Saturday of action. This is always a special, fun kind of action day because we'll be tracking really the stakes. The big stakes, of course, are at Tampa. We'll fold in some of the others that dot the landscape. It's not the typical Saturday that we're kind of used to. Let's be honest. We've had for years the, you know, the NHC Saturday as traditionally, seemingly in January, been on a big day, or early February, Fountain of Youth some years. But the new schedule that has us together in March this year and for the next three, it makes for a little bit of different play. And Rich Eng, of course, sitting. Brian Troop is going to join us again, and we're going to try to get out in front of those mandatories and any other good spots and plays, because, of course, yesterday, two $20 winners from Brian Troop, and I promised our friend Tom Herman, he said, get out, give us a few more minutes to punch those bets in, and, of course, plenty of the players punching bets in themselves in addition to their contest plays, and the next mandatory, in fact, coming up at Oaklawn, at Laurel, race six. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes, but let's welcome in not just Rich Eng, but Chris Larmy as well. Chris, good to see you.
Hey, good to be here. I mean, nothing beats being in Vegas for the NHC, whether it's in March, February, or January.
Well, exactly. or August.
Or August. That's true. I forgot about that. Or August. You
forgot about August. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve and Chris and all the listeners out there. And, you know, one thing about having the tournament this time of year, it's called March, and it's called March Madness. So we've got all kinds of basketball going on. I think there were like six college basketball tournaments that came here to Vegas to play their championships. So we've had a lot of tall kids walking around the casinos and their coaches and their fans. But it shows you we have a lot of arenas that can host and house all these tournaments. And we'll finish them up, and we'll have the draws for the NCAA basketball tournament on Sunday. But it's been a fun week for basketball, fun week for the horse racing. And I know when Brian Troop comes along, he's going to have to give us more than 90 seconds so we can all get our bets in on the horses he likes.
Well, and some of that was races that weren't even part of the mandatory list, just races where literally at a glance he had come up with a winner. Chris, let's check in with you first and foremost before we talk general themes. What about your own play?
I've finished third a lot.
Well, all right, that happens.
not a good thing at the NHC. So my opinions have been pretty good, just not getting the results. But today should be a crazy day, so I'm hoping maybe I can catch fire sometime midday. It's Saturday's always wild. We've got all the eight tracks going off at the same time, and bombs are dropping left and right, and the room really lights up. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm just hoping I'm one of the people with a smile on my face during that time.
What did you start the day with?
I don't even know my score, but it's pretty paltry, like $20-$30. So,
but you're unperturbed. The cut line is anticipated to be somewhere north of $1.60, about $160, basically, maybe up to about $175, something in that range. The top 70. Here's a 23-1 shot that is going to end up winning at Gulfstream, pulling late. This has got the room getting excited. There you go. There's a cap horse, our first of the day.
Well, we had a, well, it was a win cap. There was a 22-1 shot at Gulfstream earlier.
Okay, that was, right. Was that, I might have missed that. It might have been the opener.
It was,
is that the opener?
I think it was the last race, the race before this one.
All right, I missed that then. All right, yeah. Nice. So second cap horse.
At Gulfstream.
At Gulfstream, you got a favorite that's going to canter home, it looks like, at Oaklawn in race three.
And we got a mandatory coming up at Laurel, I think. So.
We do. 5 minutes. Let's talk about it, actually. Rich Eng, you want to start?
Yeah, well, I did handicap the race last night, and I put my margin to the number nine horse. It's Viper, so I got to get to the key pieces to remember why I liked him. But
it's Viper is the Brittany Russell horse, and I, as a matter of fact, I think I may have ended, I may have landed on It's Viper as well. I got to go look at the, I got to look at the selection grid.
Chris, have you put your Laurel mandatory in?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I don't have anything with me, so I'm trying to pull up on my phone so what the horse is for, so I can remember what I played. Unless you got a program or something, I or something
yeah, well,
I can look at.
Yeah.
So, let's see.
I'll tell you, the 9 is dead on the board at 12-1, which is shocking. Rich, I landed on It's Viper as well.
Yeah, because I'm a big Brittany Russell fan, and she does a lot of good work, and this horse has come from behind animals, so I'm hoping for a lively pace, and Kevin Gomez maybe can come from behind.
Favorite, let me pull up Chris's.
It is a one-turn mile, and I know personally when you have one-turn miles, I like horses more toward the outside posts where they can kind of get a catbird seat of the speed horses toward their inside.
The open-air outside box where the air is fresh and clear, as Marty McGee famously opines. The 6 is B West, and of course this is a four. This is a horse that... that has been kind of bounced around a little bit. B West, there's Brian Troop. Good morning, Brian. Here he comes, settling in. And you've got to be an old-time acquaintance.
Yeah, I went with a bomber in this race, a 10-horse collection day. It's just got claimed, and its numbers fit pretty well. I didn't see any, and it, you know, drew the outside post, but on the one-turn mile, that's not an issue. Cash can be an advantage sometimes.
Absolutely.
Some options just for the rider.
Yep.
And it'll be a big price, so it's the kind of horse that I'm always looking for in a contest like this, especially with the position I'm on the leaderboard right now. I need to start being aggressive with my plays. But
like
I was planning on playing this horse even if I had been in the lead. So
yeah.
I like it quite a bit. So yeah. It's
the horse was claimed from Brittany Russell. We just talked about her, and she's the previous trainer.
But the trainer, Michael Gorham, he does well off the claim. So I'm
absolutely
not too concerned about that. Although, you know, certainly he's not claiming. It's not an upgrade in the trainer, but I always like when trainers go in for a claim because they obviously see something they like, right, that they
right
think they can improve on. You know, to me it's always a positive sign, and especially when the horse's numbers fit and it's in pretty good form. So
yeah. Also, I noticed an aggressive raise in class. I mean, claimed this horse for 40,000 and now running for 62.5, so
right,
that's a positive sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And for two reasons. One is it probably means they think the horse, you know, they claim to thinking they can move it up. And also it helps with the price because a lot of people are reluctant, you know, they're off that, you know, the rise in the level, but it helps the price. And right now it's 19-1, so that's a pretty
wow
good price.
Yeah.
So that was my main opinion in here, but you know, there's a lot of contenders for sure in this race.
Looking up at the board, let's give a quick rundown for, so basically between Rich and I, it's Viper, who's come back down actually, 8-1 now for It's Viper.
That's a nice price though.
It's a perfect,
nothing
absolutely
wrong with that.
Right middle of the road long shot, kind of that sweet spot. Yesterday we had a lot of players that, Chris, that were talking that, you know, 9-2 kind of was the adjusted sweet spot for, you know, those that typically look for 6-7, 8-1 types, that they had to lower expectation a little bit yesterday because of, you know, the scenario that we faced. We are off the turf, we should mention, for those of you that are just getting going today. In terms of action, well, you
at Santa Anita
may have heard off the turf at Santa Anita, or may not have heard. So there we go. Let me get Chris. Do me a favor and swap that headset if you don't mind. You'll start with the stick.
Sure?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
So. I'm happy to.
All right. Brian Troop. Good morning. How's your evening?
Not too bad. No pressure. Not in the contest. So I had a few drinks
there
and so on and that. the problem is I haven't done much work either. So
that's all right. You didn't do much work yesterday, and you gave out $20 horses like M&Ms.
Sometimes
no pressure.
You get lucky.
No pressure.
What did you do here, Brian? So far, we've got Rich and I on the 9, now 7-1 on its Viper.
Which track are you?
Laurel 6, the
Laurel
mandatory.
Six.
Okay. And then the big price, the 10 for Chris Larmy, Collection Day, the Mike Gorham with Jean Alvello in the iron, 17-1. Your favorite continues to be B West. Jerry Robb and X-Man Xavier Perez actually been bet down from 4-1 to 2-1, 5-2 on Omo Dada, Tim Keefe, who made plenty of sense with Javion Toledo, right now 5-2. So you got a 2-1 and a 5-2. If it's not one of those, it's going to be a square price.
Well, here again, I haven't done much work in that, but just looking at it quickly and having what I marked last night and that, maybe the three horses, worthy long shot.
No easy days. Damon Diladovico and...
But I'm also not rushing to the window, so...
All right. So it's sort of a middle, it's sort of a maybe a two-star play for you.
Yeah.
14-1, now 13-1.
I'll tell you the other horse I liked in here...
I'm surprised he's that big a price. I thought he'd be...
Is it that the two horse... The two-horse that-a-way is pretty live, I think, making its second start. It could improve. I always like horses going second time out, and it's a big price. So that's probably the other long shot I like in here from a contest standpoint would be the two-horse that-a-way.
Well, just about set. Dave Rodman.
Is Zomodada.
There's
one on
the terrific tone of... Rodman, who's got, like John Dooley, has that very distinctive voice and carriage.
Not quite Richard Grunder distinct.
General
but.
News. One turn mile here at Laurel Park. Second finish line. One turn mile here at Laurel Park. Second finish line. And error off. Eldest son asked for early speed on the inside. Collection Day is right there, and B West is moving forward of the early mix. Two is Leonids. Leonids now to the front from Splendor Beauty. Second on the outside is Collection Day. As B West settles down toward the inside, and then it's 7-11 to Between Horses. No Easy Days in the second flight mix as well. Another two to Eldest Son is now mid-flight. And followed by General News. Omo Dada racing back in the pack is eager to go on and tugging along with the rider. That away down to the inside. And back is It's a Viper. Eight lengths will cover front to back heading into the turn. B West sets the tempo from Leonids in second. Splendor Beauty on the outside. Eldest Son is down to the rail as they move around that far turn. No Easy Days. Racing in the fifth spot. They're back to Collection Day in 7-11. Omadama in between horses and that away. It's Viper's three wide of the turn. And General News trailing the field with three furlongs left to go. B West is up top from Leonids. B West leads by a length from Leonids in second. For Between Horses, No Easy Days pushed along under a ride. Eldest Son saving ground into the stretch, and they're followed by that away swinging just off the inside and turning for home. A quarter of a mile left to go. B West in front by 2.5 lengths. Eldest Son now making a run there from second. Leonids backs off in third. Out of the inside is that away it's Viper closing on the far outside. Eldest Son striking in the front and taking off, and here comes it's Viper closing stoutly on the outside with a 16th to go. It's Viper way out of the middle. Eldest Son over the inside. Eldest Son, it's Viper. Photo finish at the second wire. Eldest Son, it's Viper. Photo.
A terrific race. And then you're going to have you're going to have a lot of happy people, basically, with that outcome, right? I mean, you get a 10-to-1 winner, and I think our horse ended up what?
It was about 9-to-1 or something like that. So
actually, 10-to-1. It's Viper 10-to-1, and the winner 10-to-1. So a lot of happy, players.
Yeah, win place on the winner and place on the second horse, and R9 was just a stride late. I mean, really made a huge run.
He did.
Kevin Gomez was very, very relaxed with him, and I'm thinking to myself, what is this kid waiting for? But he really, the only thing that cost him, that's the third winner, by the way, in six races for Axel Concepcion, who brings home the Jamie Ness winner. Gomez, just basically, it's a ground loss beat. If he saves a little ground, he might, he probably gets up.
Yeah, when they came to the top of the stretch, he ended up having to go about 8 or 9 wide, and he only lost by probably about 18 inches, so... you lose a lot of ground like that, and you get beat. But
yeah, it looked like he might get there, I think, even at the end. I thought he might get up, but he was way out on the track.
Well, this will be very interesting, and that gives us an opportunity, in fact, to visit the leaderboard. I did tell you that Francis Bustani, Doc Bustani, was leading right through this point of the morning. John Cozart, though, moved into second, 148.80. Jack Wong has jumped up into third. Paul Cush, who's been a presence on the board from the start, 142.40. Corey Esquire, he as well, 137.60. Harry Yaruso, A.J. Benton, Anthony Spinazzola. These are all names from yesterday, essentially, in the top 10 or 15. Mike Yaruso, which, of course, is Carrie Yaruso's husband. This is an 8-to-1 winner in New York. You might hear some smattering of applause in the background. And Adaro, your winner. Then comes Kirk Rockwell as your top 10. So the top 10 is separated by 130.50. And if we swing through the leaderboard a little bit, let's do this exercise. Right now, we'll go to the top. Let's go through number 78, which will be the cut line. And right now, the cut line, 98.90. So more or less, people have to, anybody below 98 or let's say $100, they've got to ring up, Chris, probably about 80 plus.
Yeah, probably. And well, you know, 170, 180, somewhere in there.
Right.
But is that after the last result?
That is not yet with these dollars.
That'll probably change pretty dramatically.
This will help.
Yeah, because that mandatory race that has a price will probably really shift that leaderboard.
Well, it is official. Eldest Son, 22.80 and 10.80. So you got a cap on the win end, right? And so 22 plus 10.80, right?
Yeah.
32.80.
Yeah, so that'll move some people up.
Let's see what it does. Really, one of the nicest things in recent years is the ability for the leaderboard to move with great
pretty
alacrity.
Much in real time.
Well,
yeah, not exactly, but
it's up, and Francis Bustani has the winner.
Ooh.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
196.60.
Might be his weekend.
He is breaking sharp already.
He's giving
today
the rest of the field a root canal.
Hey now. But I'm bummed. Rim shot. Where's my soundboard? Casey, we need sound effects for Chris Larmy.
If we get him back on the radio today, he can talk about a race like that. Where you got to win photo finishes like that.
That's right.
To do great in the tournament. And, you won by 18 inches, but it might as well have been a mile, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I need some Novocaine.
Well, I gave Casey a few, it's funny you said that. I gave Casey a few Vegas music cuts like we play every year. But with the Doc in the lead and seemingly, moving like a tremendous machine, We may have to pull out the eels. Novocaine for the soul. I think that is going to make its way into the rotation. A couple of names that have moved, Brian, as you suggested, this was going to shake some things up. How about Adam Lewis moving into third, 162-90?
That's a nice score.
Ken Seaman and Evan Littman, who were early leaders yesterday and involved in the top, and then now have moved back up. That Paul Winandy, who's got two tickets, and he had faded, and he bopped back up. And Clocker John Nichols,
good John.
Seventh, 153-90. And something tells me that's not just the, that. In fact, let's hear, Travis. Let's say hello to Travis Stone for the first time. Trav,
what's going on?
We got a little Clocker John moving into the top 10.
I'm not surprised. He's sharp. He's a pretty sharp guy.
You think?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Where are you? Come on.
I got 50-something. I've only played three races so far.
All right, so you're laying back?
20 bullets to go, yeah. I'm a closer. Deep closer. Maybe. We'll see.
Some early impressions? When was the last time you were here?
It's been a few years.
Right.
I've had a great time.
It's,
you know, the best part about it is hanging out and seeing all the pals. And, you know, all of us live around the country, and we don't get to see each other much. And this is a chance to just have a nice little weekend together. So, and we've had good food. Guys like us, we eat well.
We know where to, when you're part of certain movable feasts. And, you know, it's funny. Every region has their own personal favorites. Baychik has become a big Amalfi guy. He's always, that's now his favorite. Others are steak, you know, steakhouse. Some go to
Carbone. Carbone's our spot.
Carbone's.
Yeah, we had a nice one there last night. Yeah.
Very nice. Who's on the running team? Who else went?
It was me and Nick and Philly Joe and Marshall Graham and Pat Cummings.
I haven't seen Pat yet.
You know, he held court all night last night, as he usually does. His wife was there, and Matt Miller and Howard. It's a nice crew.
Very nice. Yeah, what's tonight's plan?
We're going to a sushi place tonight. Of course, I can't remember the name now that you mentioned it, but hopefully we're going to go there with a nice little bankroll for tomorrow.
Exactly. Any strategy, any horses that you've had an eye on?
The horses I've played have all run well. They just, you know, running third and fourth. So just going to keep trusting the process and go on with it and hope we get there.
Trust the process.
That's what you do.
Joel Embiid. There we go.
Exactly.
The Sixers. Travis Stone will check in. You're not up for that, for calling the Dubai World Cup, are you?
No. I'll be playing the races from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey now, Travis Stone, everybody.
Thank you.
A little inside announcer baseball. There we go. I can't help myself. Let me turn our attention up on the board. And at Tampa, they're running the Columbia Stakes. And this has got, you got the most stash in the lead. Which looks, that's the Vicky Oliver, right?
Yeah, here comes the 10 on the outside. Looks like it's going to go right by.
That's Shug, like a wildebeest.
Yeah,
that's your winner. It's going to be 10-9. Shug as the 6-5 favorite. And you know, this is a horse of Shug, Stalk of the Nation, that really has taken some steps forward.
Yeah, he was bet down pretty heavily. I thought the Morning Lion was a little off on that one. He ran pretty well there.
Thank you for that. Let me put this. Chris had mandatory. Let's see the next, and let me give you that news. The next mandatory will be in Oaklawn. You know, this is, something's amiss. The times on the sheet are not, because.
Let me see. What does it say?
Well, because we just ran that Laurel race, and it wasn't at 12:15 Pacific.
Well, Laurel changes their post time.
Did Laurel move up?
No, it's like what they put on the program initially, they change. It's like Santa Anita. They adjust their post times when the program comes out. So I'm guessing they used
interesting.
The original
time.
You know, some of these tracks
still do. Look at you. 12:52.
Yeah.
So they moved it up. they moved it up.
They did that for some reason. That you can't trust what they have when the entries first come out. Programs come out, they change the post times. Santa Anita does it too.
You know, Steve, I'm convinced some of these tracks still do the what they call the Caliente shuffle. You
know, this is up. This is faster.
Yeah.
This is moved way up.
Oh, they moved it up.
Oh yeah, by 20 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
It's as Chris suggests. The original posted, which is what Joe Gabachagaloup was using,
right,
for the mandatory list from that published the other day, and then the final PPs ended up with a completely different set of post times.
Yeah, they change it. They do that. They did that all. They've done that all week, and I know Santa Anita does the same.
Interesting.
I'm not sure why they don't just stick with the time they put out with the original entries, but they do that.
All right. Well, then now we can at least look to Oaklawn, which 3:47 Eastern. So we got a good 40-minute run up to this Oaklawn fifth. If you want to look at the next, if you do want to look ahead to the next mandatory, it's a 20,000 non-winners, a three lifetime going three quarters. It's official at Tampa, 440, 320, 280 for Talk of the Nation, 10-9-3-1-6. And you know, it's interesting, the three and the six, those horses, I tried to get them involved coming out of that allowance race. They ran 1-2 in an allowance race. They were facing stake horses for the first time, and I thought that they were good enough to mix it up with this group, and they ended up third and fifth, you know, well beaten. But nice return, though, for Vicky Oliver's Mustache.
Yeah, he ran well. He just was, I think he was against a better horse, probably.
Well, last seen in the Breeders' Cup, for those of you that remember in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, he was 50-1 and struck the front in the late stages, and then just got kind of swamped late by Victoria Road, Silver Knot, and Nagarok was beaten three lengths for everything at 52-1. And that's the first start back as a four-year-old. So a nice start. And,
yeah.
Well, you know what that is. That's Vicky Oliver getting ready for Keeneland. That's all that is.
Boy, you know, you touched on something right there. And then Christina Blacker talked about this yesterday. A lot of these horses that we're going to see right now here in the middle of March, these guys are in a lot of cases prepping their horses for Keeneland coming up in April. So no question about that.
Yeah, Keeneland's it's always a fun meet, and that the purses are better now, and you know, Kentucky Racing is definitely on the upswing pretty much across the board right now.
Chris, give us an update. One thing, I really haven't spent any time, not just so far in the day plus, but also really in the lead up to the contest, from the players committee side of things, you know, there's been the usual concerns that you know, that players voice. How about a status report from your perspective?
Well, I'll say, you know, one thing they've done new this year is they have a mobile, what you can wage, you can make your selections on a mobile device using an app, as long as you're in the ballroom on the Wi-Fi here. I've tried it out. That's great. I mean, you don't even have to go up to the machines, especially like on a mandatory race where there tends to be lots of crowds, and if you kind of want to wait to make your selection, just sit there right on your phone and make your selection. So I thought that was kind of a neat innovation. They've kind of slow rolled it out because they wanted to kind of test it out before they start encouraging everybody to use it. But I think it's been a really nice addition to this year, so that's one change I think has been positive, especially for people who have some mobility issues. But I think everyone will benefit from, you know, shorter lines, even if you want to continue to use machines. You know, I think that was kind of a neat innovation. So that's one change that I thought was kind of nice. I'm trying to think if there's anything else new that we did this year. I can't think of anything offhand that's new. I know there's some, I'm getting lots of suggestions while I'm here on ways we can improve. One of the things that came up I thought was kind of a good idea was, you know, the racing's contracted quite a bit, and Saturday racing is so much better now than weekday racing. I mean, it's just night and day, that we might want to think about having more of the play in the contest be on Saturday, maybe have fewer picks on Friday, more on Saturday.
Interesting.
Just yeah,
that's
where the race
is. That's a very interesting idea.
How does that strike you, Brian?
Yeah, that strikes me because exactly what Chris just said, that there's a lot of weak races on and
smaller fields.
Smaller fields, they don't produce prices or anything in that. So I mean, today's Saturday's cards are far stronger, and you're going to see far more prices than you did yesterday in that.
We already have. I mean, we've had two cap horses.
Also, Chris said the mobile for using in the room and that. You think there'll come a point where people will be able to stay in their rooms upstairs and do it too?
No, it's really set up.
Not going to do.
Now you have to do it in the ballroom. It's set up. You know, it's got a so that you have to be here on the ballroom Wi-Fi. Yeah, we don't want. We want this. The whole idea of the event is it's supposed to be a celebration, like a convention of horse players.
Yeah.
You know, some people have advocated for doing it online, and it's just not going to happen. And there's plenty of good online contests, but the idea is to get the people in the ballroom, get the energy up, get the camaraderie going, social aspect. So you know, we don't want to lose that. This is just really to help with people that you know might have issues getting up and down all the time, and also just to help, like I said, with you know, crowding around terminals when it's a mandatory race and everybody has to get a play. And especially if, you know, the number of entries have gone up over time. It's pretty crazy, you know, on these mandatory races.
The entries are a little higher this year than normal because they let people, because of COVID,
some defer their entry. Yep,
so
some deferments.
It's a little, this year's 752 is likely, I don't know how many people deferred, but I'm guessing likely at least 100 entries.
Were quite a few that was just a special thing, and typically they don't allow deferrals. I mean, I think this year they weren't allowing any deferrals, so next year should be kind of back to normal. But yeah, I mean, COVID was a crazy time, so.
Yeah.
You know, like Steve reminded me of, we had an NHC in August, so.
Yeah, I mean, COVID, I played my last live contest other than Thursday was the 2020 NHC. I did not play a live contest in 3 years and a month from that.
Wow.
You know how crazy it got during COVID? Could you imagine Las Vegas casinos were closed for a couple of months?
Yeah, that's
literally all closed. Amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah, it seems like it's a long time ago, but it wasn't that long ago.
No.
No, and still, you know, people still getting sick. Christina, one of Christina's kids, she almost didn't come yesterday. One of her two kids came home from school COVID.
Yeah, I mean, it's not over, but at least we're not in the lockdown phase anymore. Hopefully we stay out of that. But so anyway, I thought, you know, though there's some ideas there. You know, I've got a lot of suggestions. I think one of the things that we'd like to do is to do some things to the final table to make it more exciting. What I've been advocating is to have an elimination of every race. So you'd start out with your, you know, 10 people in the final table, and after the first race or first two races, whoever's at the bottom is out. And the next race, the next person goes out. And so you keep every race, there's a lot of tension because somebody's going to be knocked out of the contest with each race. And then, you know, it would get down to the end where it might even be head-to-head between two people for the title. And, I mean, every race would be exciting.
I know, like musical chairs.
I know what that will do. You'll find people, especially sitting in ninth and tenth, they won't be betting 3-1s or anymore. They'll be betting like larger prices than that because they have to move up or go out.
So. Yeah, and everybody have to. It'll change the whole thinking on strategy because you know you to stay alive. It's like a survivor, you know.
Yeah.
But it just I think it gives you something to talk about and build some tension in every single race. It doesn't just go down to the last race. And I think it'd be kind of neat to come down to last race like head-to-head with two people. You know, a lot more game theory and strategy. So anyway, that's an idea. I've been pitching because I'd really like to make it more compelling. I think this is the first year we might actually live stream with video. I know Steve's been doing it for years. Just think about the discussion you'd have, Steve, you know, with that extra added you know, strategy piece.
To me, I mean, the format is conducive anyway. It doesn't you know, it doesn't matter. Whatever we do, and whatever structure it takes, it'll be fun. And the people, based on the reaction I hear from people, they just so enjoy the atmosphere in general, and you know, the cheering and just the background and you know, the way in which the day, you know, keeps culminating and the flow of the 3 days. I mean, somebody like Dr. Bustani, a lot of years we've had a day one winner who then gets ice cold on Saturday and slowly sinks down the board. We got a long way to go on this Saturday card, but right now it looks like Doc Bustani's going to, you know, continue to keep pace.
He keeps going, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to have two good days.
You know, Chris, really I was thinking about your idea about the elimination. I could just imagine, say, in one of the final table races, you have the last two contenders, and their two horses are, like, coming neck and neck down the wire, yeah. And one of them is going to get knocked out of the table. I mean, you talk about exciting. That could be an unbelievable type of finish, and that could happen every one of the legs on that final table.
Right. Every leg, somebody's going to be gone. So, I mean, and everybody knows that if a long shot comes in, the guys behind me have it, I could get knocked out. So even if you're not at the bottom, you're still kind of in danger. So it changes your whole thinking.
Yeah, you'll be doing a lot of blocking in that then, because, or at least, for instance, if you're eighth place and you have 220 and I'm 10th at 200, you know damn well that I have to play at least a 9-to-1 shot, a little bit less than that because you're getting wind place and that.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot of theory.
You know what I'm going to have to, I'd be stupid, I'm going to finish 10th, so I'd be stupid to be playing something 4 or 5 to 1 where I can't catch you in that. And exactly, you have to be thinking too, what the guy behind you playing, because if you don't play enough in that, you're going to get knocked out in that.
Yeah, I just think it would make every race more exciting, because now it's exciting, but you know, it just builds up to the end, where now, you know, every single race somebody's going to be, you know, not survive.
Yeah, and, you know, and in a way, staying with your idea, you know, if the 10th place finisher is out, at least, what are they going to get, like 50,000?
They wouldn't change the price.
Yeah, I mean, the price money.
Right, they're just no longer in the contest.
They're still getting their money. I mean, basically, if you're in 10th place then, and you need at least $20, if you can find a close to a cap horse or something, you might as well play it to bolt yourself up, because you know you're not losing your 10th place in that.
So I mean, I think there's a lot of ways you could approach it, but just to me, if we live stream it, it just gives it's more like, you know, any, you look at any show now, they make competitions out of everything from cooking, and it's always some kind of a survivor format, right? They start out with a certain number, and then they, you know, someone gets eliminated every round. So why not do it in the NEC?
If I can do a corollary to, like, the World Series of Poker, you know, invariably at some point, some juncture, a player has to go all in.
Right.
And when that happens, your tournament life is on the table. You know, the flip of the cards and see how it comes out. So in essence, every race in this final table contest, you're almost going almost all in every time, especially the guys on the bottom.
Right.
You know, they're basically going all in because, you know, as Brian, you were talking about, if I'm 10th and you're about $20 behind the 9th place guy, well, you got to go all in to try to get at least past him so you can survive to the next race. It's really,
or if you're in last, you got to hit something, because if you don't hit something, you know you're going to stay in last. Sure. So, yeah, you're right. You're basically... all your chips are on the table if you're at the bottom, but everybody else is at risk too, because if that guy hits and you get passed up, you could be forced down. The last one. So I just think it would be fun. You know, I'm biased because I've been pushing it for a while, but to me, we want to do anything we can to make that final table more exciting, and I think that's one easy way to do it. You know, it doesn't change the format in any way other than just you're going to have, you know, fewer people each round, but they still win their money. It's just now they can't, like, that guy in 10th can't wait until the last race and stab and get a lucky long shot. He's no longer there. So when it gets down to that last race, it's down to the last two or three people, however you want to do it. And, you know, they're all going trying to beat each other. together, and they're not a bunch of people below them stabbing with long shots, hoping they jump past them. They're all out of it. It comes down to, like, your opinion of the race, and if you're in the lead, you're in that advantageous spot where you can block the guy behind you, especially if there's a pretty strong favorite. So there's a lot of game theory and strategy of coming near the end, but that happens at every round. It's just lower down on the board, and you just have that same thing I like a lot about the, you know, contest. You have that every race rather than just on the last race or two. So I think it'll be a fun and way to
a new wrinkle.
New wrinkle, yeah.
And you know, it the final table was a new wrinkle, and you know, basically born out of the poker concept. And how many years has it been now? What? Of the final table.
This is probably
15 was the first year.
I think it was about eighth.
I think
eighth
I was
year.
Yeah. It was 15. I'm pretty sure 15 was the first year because that's the year Jonathan Kitchen got two entries in.
Right.
And that and I ended at ninth or tenth. The tenth. I ended up tenth. Phil Lamb was 11th. Joe Scania was 11th and. Phil Lamb was 12th, and he was knocked out in that. And the first year that was, I'm pretty sure it was 15.
15.
Yeah, and Mike Mayo and I were the ones that really pushed to get the final table in. And one of the reasons we did is because we wanted to get it on, you know, TV, on video, live. And we wanted to make it, you know, just watching 800 people in a ballroom, we wanted to make it more exciting. And I think just the second idea of having an elimination round just takes that to the next level, you know, makes it exciting.
Well, like
race.
A horse racing shootout, like in hockey.
There you go.
Well, when they go to overtime and then the shootout to decide the final decision for the game.
It's similar to what you said about poker and that you got to go all in and that. And I mean, if I'm going all in, I'm 10th and I need $20 and, you know, someone might figure in troops playing you know, 7 or 8 to 1 shot just to go ahead of the guy. No, I'm not. I'm likely playing my best long shot because I'd sooner get up and catch the first guy in that. And, you know, if he's $60-$70 ahead of me in that, you might as well go for it if you're going to go out.
Well, and of course, tomorrow when we get to that stage, a lot of that kind of, you know, insight and you know, those decisions, it's part of the real, you know, the real tension as we talk about the reveal, you know, when the reveal is going to come and, you know, what is, at what point do some of the bottom rungs kind of just, you know, take what, get as high as they can, you know, whether it's going to be fifth, fourth, sixth, fourth even, and just realize I can't win. I can't, you know, it becomes fruitless. It's very different today where everybody is reaching to be in the top 10, and you worry, you end up, this is actually a good conversation to have Brian and Rich and Chris, who have all had extended success in the contest world. What's interesting about this is the people that are, let's say, in the top 20, 30, they're playing a little defensively, or are they playing all out at this point to just try to get as high as they possibly can, or are they just wanting to make sure that they get to day three?
Once you get in the top 10 in that, in my opinion, or at least the way I play in that, I mean, I don't really, I'm still only playing for first in that. So I'm playing that way. As you mentioned yesterday, some of us Canadians, we just keep firing away in that.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do. Like, I mean, when I, in 15, when I was, I came in and I was ninth in that, I wasn't playing to move up, you know, two or three spots. I'm playing to, like,
you're playing for 750,000.
Yeah, I'm not playing to move from seventh, from ninth to seventh or eighth and so on. I'd sooner gamble and try to move first than that.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the player, but I think most people are playing in like a 3-day contest, and you know, if you're trying to move up every time, every race you can. I wouldn't get defensive at any point on day two or day three even.
But once you're in the final 10, you might as well go for it.
Yeah, it just
depends. You're guaranteed 10th money no matter what.
Right. Although, and then when you get into, like Steve said, if you get into the last few races, some people might be happy to move up from, say, fourth to third or third to second because it can be worth $50,000 or $100,000. Not go for the win. Others might just want to go for the win. It just depends on what your objective is.
I agree with that. That maybe if you're moving up from third to second, or you're moving up from fourth to third, but from 10th to 7th.
Right, right. It's more near the last few
money
races.
There's not enough money differential in that to make it worth your while on that.
Or even if you're on 10th, you may say, well, the guy in first is just unreachable. I'm going to go for second or third.
Obviously, if he's got $64 on you, he's unreachable if you're one race left in that.
So it all comes down to situation and what your objectives are.
What you think of the race itself in that, too.
But, I mean, some people will be thrilled to go home with $100,000. We'd all be thrilled to go home with $100,000. But some might say, hey, this is how often I have a chance to win $750,000.
Right.
I'm going to take that chance. I mean, it just depends on your tolerance for risk and what you're trying to get out of it.
And what you came here for.
Right.
And you know,
that year in 15 when I was in it, there were a number of people that moved up a few places in that, and they played that way through the whole contest. I think Mike Ferroza was ahead of me, and he finished behind me, and he played the same way as me. We just kept firing in that. I'm moving up big time or not at all.
There you go. We're about 6 minutes to the eighth at Tampa, and this is the very short priced favorite of Skippy Longstocking in the Challenger. Is there, I mean, I looked up at first, was 1-5. What is he now? 1-2.
He does look like the one to beat. I don't know if anybody should be 1-2 in the race, but, you know.
2-1 winner at Aqueduct. It's wet there as well. You've got kind of a sealed slop kind of a look, kind of a shiny surface. Rich, any thoughts on beating Skippy Longstocking? And of course, as Marty McGee and I speculated, Marty first gave the indication that Kenny McPeak might not be bringing Classic Causeway to Tampa, and indeed this morning Kenny confirmed that he wasn't shipping. So Classic Causeway was a scratch out of here. We'll see what Kenny does instead, but Skippy Longstocking seems like he can sit behind Speed in here. It just feels like he is kind of overwhelming in this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not anxious. This is a race I'm passing in the contest.
Sure.
But, you know, if I had to play a horse, I would probably go with the 7-horse Tax. You know, he's, let's see, what is his
5
price?
5-1.
Yeah, that's not a great price, but, you know, he's got some back class, and he can be forwardly placed. And he's got a trainer that wins races, so, you know, that would probably be the alternative. But this is a race I'm not playing. I'm not betting it. I'm not playing in the contest.
Yesterday during handicapping, Scott Shapiro tabbed Trademark, the Vicky Oliver. And the Reds, got some love too. Saffy Joseph, Saffy's other horse. He is running two in here beside Skippy. He's got the Reds, who was a Mid-Atlantic product that had a little bit of a cameo on the 3-year-old Classic Trail.
Yeah, he's not a bad horse. Not a bad horse.
You're looking right now, actually, six. You're looking at 10-1. On the Reds, a business model. Brendan Walsh, if you're looking for a price, 8-1 on business models, not terrible.
That's why in Circle I finally caught up to you, Stephen, and opened the form to race 8 at Tampa. But from my handicapping last night, I did Circle the 8 business model as a horse I liked. I know the horse did not run very well on the Tapeta last time out at Gulfstream Park, and even the race before that, and the Tenacious was not a good effort. But you go 3 back, and a lot of ways you have to be a forgiving handicapper to try to get some price. The race 3 back is actually probably good enough to upset this group. So I went for the 8 business model.
The way I structured that middle pick 4 at Tampa, I had Classic Causeway as the A and used Trademark and Business Model as C's on a backup ticket, just in case something went amiss, and making Skippy a single on a lot of plays. Front and back, this is the anchor leg of that middle pick 4. It's also obviously a part of the All Stakes pick 5 and the All Stakes, the start of the All Stakes pick 4.
Yeah, unfortunately that last race of the pick 5 at Tampa is a tough one. That maiden race on
That's the late pick 4.
Oh, okay.
There's All Stake. There's 2 All Stake.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really?
I was off too yesterday, and Marty let me know. He said, there's pair of pick 4, pick 5s that are All Stake ending with the Tampa Bay Derby.
Oh, I did not know that. Darn. I didn't pick up on that. NAC kind of gets a little overwhelming in the prep. Normally, I would be all over that, All Stakes pick 5.
In this race at Tampa coming up, and that, I sort of like Tax a little bit. He's coming off a bit of, not too much. He had one race back. He's coming off a bit of a layoff. He's 6 weeks in that. If he can get loose on the lead, Mighty Heart's going to push. I don't know. I think he's got a shot. I'm going to the window.
Two of us are on that. That's a lot of weight for that poor horse.
Well, that's the first that's the first jump up effort by Brian Troop. Yesterday he did that twice and he scored twice.
He hit them both. Well, hopefully he hits another one. And I guess it is tax season, so
hey now,
Larmy
on fire early here.
Yeah, don't encourage me. I'm known for lots of puns, and my family groans all the time, so don't get me started.
I take it that you and Scott did not have a chance to do a Sport of Kings
show. We didn't. We take this week off. We did not. We would have been covering these races, though, if we had.
Sure. We're under a minute. Yeah, we're 0 to post. We'll take the... Obviously, we'll... the challenger, the grade 3. You hear Frank Miramati in the background. This is a isolated leader at Santa Anita pulling away at this point. This is the opener at Santa Anita. And there you go. This, as you can hear Frank say, overwhelming winner at 6-5. And how about this? Dan Blacker, after Christina was with us yesterday. How funny is that in the opener? 6-5, Joe Bravo aboard a Temple City colt, El Potente, and an easy winner and a short number to get action going. And, of course, they'll run the San Carlos later, and that goes as race 5 at Santa Anita, and the Beholder Mile late in today's action. They're behind the gate. Let's get ready to take Jason Beam's call.
Yeah, big day for Jason. So, big day at Tampa.
Well, and just listening. Brian Skirka is going to slip in and join us at some point.
Yeah, I told Brian, I thought he's done a great job in the booth here at the NAC this year. He hasn't. Part of what you want to do is not talk too much in that role. I thought he's done a pretty good job of coming in when it was, giving useful information, keeping people on track with the mandatories. So, he's done well.
I will step in with a piece of information too. Francis Bustani is now up by $60. He's hit something else with an optional $225.60. Closest pursuer, Kirk Rockwell, $164.10. That is stunning. He's up by $60, Brian.
Yeah, that's what you want to do in that. Bill Belichick, he says,
Run up the score.
Don't let them back in the game in that.
Put on the throttle.
I know that the year that when I won in that, I remember saying to Jamie Michelson and his dad in that, once I think I was about 170 or so that day, and I said, I might as well keep going because tomorrow might not be a very good day. And if you remember, there were two or three tracks that were scratched in that.
That's right.
They cut down in that. People thought it was to my advantage that year because they, but it wasn't because I'm an East Coaster and that I ended up having to play more Santa Anita and Golden Gate races in that. But I had such a big lead the first day in that. And I remember saying that to them that I might as well keep going today because it could be slim pickings tomorrow on that.
There you go. And that clearly is the way it's been approached.
I fully agree. If I was him, I'd be trying to find something wrong that I could put them really away.
Let's start taking a look. As soon as this race is over, we want to be ready to look at the next mandatory, that fifth race at Oaklawn, if we could, guys. I want to be able to give everybody a chance. There's Nancy Holtis in the paddock at Oaklawn. And I haven't actually noticed, I think they got a fast track for a change on a Saturday at Hot Springs.
Yeah, it seems like they don't have many of those.
All right, let's get ready for Brian here. Let me pull up the audio and we'll check in.
See if the tax man can.
There we go.
Provide a return.
I need to be loose on the lead here.
But you got to out.
Paco don't know much else, so
yeah exactly. Right?
You got the one-eyed horse that might be battling. That's the one you got to.
Well, yeah, the Canadian.
Mighty
horse,
Heart. Yeah.
It's the horse that won the Queen's Plate up in Canada.
And the race is on in the Challenger Stakes. It's time for the favorite Skippy Longstock and Tax from the outside, showing speed and Trademark down along the fence. It's going to be the two inside runners quickest here. It's Trademark and Skippy Longstocking lead him into that first turn. Mighty Heart is out in third. Tax tries to work over from that outside into the fourth position. Certainly Furious up the inside joins that one. It's two more lengths then back to the Reds. And Business Model at the back early on. It's Trademark, Antonio Gallardo to take the point. They lead it three quarters of a length. Skippy Longstocking, who finds a good position in second on the outside, is Mighty Heart, who's third. The opening quarter, 23-1. Certainly Furious Tax. They race fourth and fifth. Top five only separated by two. Another length then back to the Reds, and another three then back to Business Model, who trails. 4.5 furlongs left to go in the Challenger. Skippy Longstocking right up alongside of Trademark, draws with it ahead as they run to the half-mile pole. Mighty Heart going to be three deep as they run to that far turn. Tax starts to scoot in between runners, is up to a joint third now, only two off the top. Here's the Reds starting to move up, going to be four wide as they go into that turn. Then comes Surly Furious. Business Model still at the back, with the top six just separated a length and three quarters after a 47-second opening half mile. Skippy Longstocking right up alongside of Trademark, and those two by the 5/16th pole. Surly Furious gets room down on the inside and goes by Tax to come up and challenge as Skippy Longstocking goes to the front. Surly Furious, the new danger toward the inside. Tax swings out from third. The Reds stalled out a touch on the far outside, trying to rally up toward the inside. His Business Model still has three or four lengths to find. Surly Furious hits the front. Skippy Longstocking right back at him. Tax down the outside, and Business Model continues to make up ground down at the fence. 16th to go. Skippy Longstocking in front now. Surly Furious back to second along with Tax. Skippy Longstocking going to win the Challenger, going away by 3.5 in the end. Second was close. Either Tax or Surly Furious. Business Model finished fourth.
Well, a very confidently handled Skippy Longstocking. Irad Ortiz took a peek, and I tell you, I give him credit because he noticed that Surly Furious, and what a good job by Glenn Wismer. We were at Presque Isle when he won the Presque Isle Masters with Surly Furious, and this is a nice horse, and best horse that Glenn has had in a long time for Joe Novogratz. Kind of fun, and this is a nice graded stake placement for Surly Furious on the dirt.
Yeah, he slipped through on the rail nicely there. Saved all the ground. Tax went really wide, and I think Tax got him, though, for a second.
That wasn't the type of race I'd want to run Tax on. I'd flip.
That's it.
That was, I don't
remember, but there's
the Santa Anita race. The Santa Anita race when they went
the Santa Anita race and they ran 1, 2, 3 with Proxy, Stiletto Boy, and then the other guy.
Defunded,
thank you. And who was the, there was a first horse that came back that won at the
Oaklawn.
Wasn't it
like,
Oakland.
Yeah, the, it was Last Samurai.
Last Samurai. Yeah. Last Samurai was the first one, so now Skippy Longstocking. So that's essentially about like a key race right there coming back with five.
That's a terrific pickup. And just pulling it up here. While we've got a second,
he's got a fact
challenger.
Fact check me in real time.
I want to see. No, I just want to see the chart. Here's the chart. There we go. Art Collector, Defunded, Stiletto Boy, Last Samurai, Proxy, Cyberknife, Skippy Long, White Abario as well.
White Abario, there you go. White Abario. I knew it was like four or five winners from that race. Super key race.
Get Her Number as well, who I think ran back, has not run back yet, and might turn back. You could see him.
Yeah, he should turn back.
You should look for something. I tell you, the Carter would be a terrific spot for him.
Yeah.
To cut back to 7/8. Very nice. Emily Gullickson checking in. There
jumping
we go.
Jumping in with a
with a little piece.
Impromptu jump in.
Well, and we should mention Simplification as well. Simplification was third in the Gulfstream Mile last week.
Right, yeah.
So placement there,
very
too.
Very productive race. All right, handing it back.
Nicely done.
Oh, no problem.
Well done.
There you go, right? I love it. All right, let's turn our attention. $3.240 for Skippy Longstocking in here. Let's turn our attention, though, to 5 minutes to post, 6 minutes to post for the fifth race at Oaklawn. This is that $20,000 that we mentioned as the next mandatory. Where do we want to start? Who's got an opinion?
Oh, I got an opinion, and I got an opinion on everything. But I'd say, for me, the most likely winner is the five-horse Mean Jakey, who's a square price at 5-1. The horse I probably like for the contest would be the three-horse Sisaway Now, I think, is rounding into really top form, third off the layoff. And, you know, is 11-1 or 12-1 now on the board. That's the kind of horse I think that could surprise in here. So, betting, I'd probably 3-5 here.
Yeah.
The contest, I'd probably go with a 3.
And if I was playing in the contest, Chris and Steve, I'd probably try someone like the 6, Muggsy Malone.
Muggsy.
This horse, has not run very well lately, but the last win was for a claiming 16,000 at Laurel, and now is running for 20. So he's back with his friends off a couple of bad efforts, but he was claimed by new trainer Contreras, so maybe this horse might wake up today at a huge price.
Yeah, and he cuts back in distance, which can sometimes really wake a horse up.
We had, in fact, the first mandatory, that Tampa 5th, you had a prominent cutback and got bet a little, got bet down, I think, to 7-2, but still. I ended up looking outside at the 10, Grapnel, Terry Brennan, who's been kind of nosing, coming in here near second off the layoff, and just trying to go back through the notes.
Second off the claim, too.
Second off the claim, I mean, yeah, there you go. That's what I was angling for.
Although his stats aren't great second off the claim. Like I said, I always like when trainers claim horses. So I think that's a positive sign. I'd say that horse definitely has a shot. What's the price on him?
10-1.
Yeah, that's a pretty good price.
11-1.
Yeah, I was looking at the race and that. It's a real tough race and so on and that. I noticed that I was wondering last night when I was looking at it. Todd Jordan's got two horses in the race. I see he scratched the one with his daughter on it and that. And those numbers, I'm not in love with the idea that he claimed it from Cipriano Contreras and that, but Santana took the mount here and so on, and he looks like he's competitive in that in the race, and likely there's enough speed in there that he's coming from out of it in that.
Yeah, he's the one closer.
He's
the closer in the race. So if it, he gets a setup, he could surprise.
I'm
going to
try and get my money back from tax and go to the window again.
Is it raining in Oakland now? It doesn't look good on the screen.
It does look hazy, which can happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm used to it raining every time I play Oakland, but they're getting some kind of weather there because it looks like they're in either fog, which is
it looks hazy. There's no doubt.
Brian went up to the window again.
He got excited. He talked himself into that horse. We're watching here at Gulfstream, and you've got some short prices hounding a 30-1 shot. Looks like the 30-1 shot is gone. 3-1 Le Beau. You got an oncoming 5-1 that might get second, but
got there.
May have won this, right? The outside horse.
I think so. The
5-1.
Yeah. All right. Well, I am gonna have to go make some plays.
Attaboy. All right.
But I'll leave you with a 3-5 exact in this race, and I really enjoy talking. Maybe we'll chat some more before it's over.
Absolutely, Chris Larmy, everybody.
Like I said, I love the final table. That whole, to me, is the best part of this contest. Especially, for your show, that's always the best part.
It builds up and builds up, and by the time you get to the table, you're familiar with a number of the participants, and it makes for just. Everybody is all in. They've made an emotional commitment one way or the other. Chris, give everybody the details on the Sport of Kings show.
Oh, Sport of Kings podcast. Scott Carson and I, we drop the pod usually on Fridays. We cover a pick five at wherever the premier racing is for that weekend on Saturday. And you can get it. You can follow me on Twitter at Derby1592 if you want to get a link, or just go out on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and look up Sport of Kings. So
easy to remember. And Scott, of course, with Mark Annenberg basically
new
retiring.
Product, yeah, manager for DRF.
For the Timeform U.S. product as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excited for Scott.
Well, he's going to be busy. I hope he's not too busy.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Chris Larmy, everybody.
Rich, good seeing you.
Let's get a picture, actually, before you go.
All right.
We could do that. You could take that off if you want, so you can. How's your son, by the way? I should have asked. Son's good? Here, the stick mic to him, if you would. Yeah. How's he doing?
My son's doing great. He's still fighting, but he has his own academy now, a martial arts academy. He's doing really well. It's going for like a year and a half, and he's really having fun with that. So I'm proud of him, and I'm, happy grandfather.
Outstanding. Chris Larmy, what's going on? You guys good?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm following it. There we go. Chris Larmy, everybody, and it was the 5-1 one horse, Violet Gibson, that did get up at Gulfstream in that seventh, and 3-1 shot. So the 8-5 favorite completely away from the board. Yeah, go ahead. You want to? All right, that's fine. Well, then, Rich, then you make the move to the headset. All right, and that. And then I can handle.
I jump around too much.
All right. Well, it wouldn't matter. I see. You mean in terms of getting the headset off? I got you. All right. That's fine. Let's make a final determination on this Oakland fifth.
I bet the 12 horse.
You bet the 12, and you're looking at 6-1.
I need lots of pace in the race.
Rich, final
thoughts? He's a stone-cold closer in the race.
My vote is for the 6 at a big price, Muggsy Malone.
Muggsy Malone for Rich Ang, and I ended up with Grapnel, Eldon Gonzalez for Terry Brennan, with an anchor down 5-year-old gelding 9-1, which is a nice number as we move into the gate. Let's get set for the call from Jim Byers. I think that sounds like Matt Dinnerman, right? I don't see Golden Gate though.
It is Golden Gate. They're coming down the deep stretch.
Oh, there's Golden Gate down there.
Yep.
All right.
Race one.
We're at that point where the eight tracks are kind of, they, you know, can only put four on one screen. So yeah. sometimes you got to go crane your neck around. Here we go for the field. Up. Well, I made one mistake because I got the Tampa feed in front of me.
Here, one more left to load.
Here we go. Here's Oaklawn and the next mandatory.
All in line.
Third of the day.
They're off. Peaceful Street out well. So is Philo Beto. Those two, along with Mean Jakey, move out to the front end. Up toward the outside comes Wesley in racing in fourth. And then it's Muggsy Malone just inside of that one in fifth. Atrus to the outside sixth. Length and a half then. And Lansdowne is racing in seventh. Followed by Grapnel, eighth on the outside, about seven lengths from the lead. Sisaway now is another length back. And then it is three or four lengths farther back to Red Label. And Title Shot is last of all as the 11 circle the far turn. Up front, Peaceful Street drives to the lead. Wesleyan is racing second. Peaceful Street is in the three path here. Then Wesleyan, and here comes Mean Jakey gaining right through on the inside. And they straighten away in the up. Mean Jakey on the inside. Coming from behind, Grapnel. Inside of that one is Lansdowne. Peaceful Street all out. Mean Jakey is next. And Lansdowne, one last surge on the outside. Very close to the wire. Lansdowne or Peaceful Street, then Mean Jakey, and Grapnel fourth.
Lansdowne, the two, I think, depending on the angle of the wire. Rich, what do you think?
I thought it was the two. That's Lansdowne.
Brian, what do you think? You thought the two got him?
Yeah, I thought so.
But this is a. This
I
is
was fooled yesterday, though. I thought another
official.
Outside horse won yesterday, and I was wrong.
11.
So.
0.31.
Well, this is a big ticket. This is a 14-to-1 shot.
It looked like that kind of race. You know, we all pick prices because it just looked like that kind of race.
The funny part is on the quad screen we've got here, and it, for those that had, you know, Peaceful Street was the 6-to-5 favorite, so I doubt anybody's even playing that one. Boy, this is going to be very, very close. I have to kind of crane my neck around a post to see the finish.
It's like the old Yankee Stadium.
The obstructed view.
Yeah.
That for people, you know, for people that used to go to ballparks and you'd buy a ticket outside the gate that somebody was hawking and there'd be a stamp on it, OV,
yeah.
And people didn't know what, or sometimes OB, and people were like, what is that obstructed view? There were some seats in Yankee Stadium, there was literally a post,
yep,
right in front of you. You'd be turning your head one side or the other. There's some spots at Fenway that's like that.
We're showing our age if we can talk about that, Steve, you and me.
I'll tell you what, this may be the favorite. This is very tough to separate.
I got fooled on this yesterday about the same type
at Oaklawn.
And I thought the outside had got him, and I was wrong. I could be wrong again. I thought the outside got the.
All right, we will
but
wait.
That doesn't
and watch.
Look like it did.
Well, we're about. Again, we got a nice little break here before we go to Aqueduct.
Two did get up.
There you go. So you've got yourself a $32 horse and probably, you know, $15, $18 to play. So, Rich, here's a very nice result for players that were looking to maybe do some leapfrogging.
Yeah, if the doc has this one, he's in real good shape.
That's a good point.
And then we heard some noise in the room, so I think some of the people here had this horse, so it's going to change the board. I'll be interested to see who pops up there, Stephen.
That sounds like Dave Rodman, and looking, there we go, the Laurel 8th right now. Give everybody a reset. Let's look up at Tampa as well. And, of course, this really fun stake card. 10 minutes to the Hillsboro. And, of course, the older fillies and mares. A group certainly that Chad Brown from an entry standpoint, dominates with Rogier and Shantasara. Let's take a quick look at the board. I tell you, that is a very difficult. I'm going to switch over in terms of the graphic. I want to look at my ADW feeds because that is an impossible board. Rich, the graphics at Tampa. I never noticed this because I don't really typically look at those kinds of graphics. I'm usually looking on the ADW. That's a very difficult board to read.
It's very confusing.
Wow.
Not only are the colors, but there's you see
the
numbers
Tampa Bay
everywhere.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Well, compare that to like looking at the Aqueduct graphics. What a huge difference. Aqueduct much more clean, easy to see the odds and the horses.
Well as the exacta and double probables.
Yeah.
They're getting into gate actually for the Aqueduct 7th. They're officially sloppy in New York. Here's the rundown at Tampa in the 7 horse field, and Shantasara at 1-2 is a little over the top. Why she doesn't deserve to be 1-2 in this group?
It's that Chad Brown. People love Chad Brown.
Well, he's got 3 in here though, Rich. Rogier is 9-1.
Yeah, she's a grade one horse though. I'm not sure that there's any other. Actually, the only other grade one horse in the race, I think, is that I'd consider a grade one horse. Are Chad's his 3 horses. I don't see anything else that's really a grade one horse in that.
I wanted to.
This could be a Chad Brown Triactor again.
Well, that wouldn't be anything shocking by any means.
No.
But frankly, I thought there were a couple of potential variables in here, and the biggest issue is there's no speed. There's virtually, no speed. Scottish Star, probably from the outside, for Pletcher, is going to set your pace. I suppose that Chad may have even entered California Queen to maybe boost the pace along so that either Shantasara or Rogier have a fair pace to run into.
Yeah, I could see where the 1 California Queen, the 3rd of the Chad Brown horses, might be the rabbit for the other 2. So I could see Edgar Zaya ascending from the rail. But, plus he's got a good post to send from. So, I would agree. The 1, to me, looks like a potential front runner the early part of the race.
You've also got Temple City Terror making the first start for Town and Country after the sale that Pocket Aces, they had so much success with her, making $800,000 and then being sold. Cherie DeVoe brings back Gam's Mission, who's a multiple graded stake winner and, in fact, was the first graded stake winner for Cherie in her career. This is Jerry's Lazy F Ranch. You got a 10-1 shot that is trying to make it home at Aqueduct. But the 4-1 Big Bean Christine trying to overhaul her, and it looks like she's going to. The 10-1 shot ran very well, though, on the front end. It feels like Aqueduct right now, speed is going to be tough to reel in.
And they're way out in the middle of the track, too. The winners have been coming from outside.
We're coming up toward the stake at Aqueduct as well. The correction, so 5-8. 4-1 over the 10-1, and no sign, in fact, of the 6-5 favorite there at the Big A. 5 minutes to post at Tampa. Let's give a, now that we've actually had some official numbers go by, let's take a look at the leaderboard and see if there's any other change. Well, there was some movement. Paul Kalia has moved into second, 197. Eric Archer with a move into third, 191. Meantime, Doc Bustani, 269.20. So a $70 plus lead for Doc Bustani. He had a little something, maybe a little place money.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere.
What did he have before the race?
I'm not doing screen caps. I used to do that. It gets almost confusing.
I think he said something like 262 or something.
Yeah, I think he got a place price, basically. Steve Nemitz has made a big move. Here are some new names that moved into the top 10. Steve Nemitz, 170, is fifth. Jeff Vandry, 164.80, sixth. Adam Lewis, seventh. He's been around, 162.90. Ken Seaman, John Cozart, Eric Littman. So some of those, the second half of the top 10. Then moving into the second 10, Paul Winandy, 154. John Nichols, Clocker John, 153.90. A.J. Benton, 153.70. Ken Shaw has moved up, 140. What was that number? 153. Gary Bruce, Paul Cush, Corey Esquire, Paul Sherman, 17th. Paul Sherman, a dangerous lurking presence. And Greg Gass and Cheryl McIntyre, 20th.
She can be very, very dangerous, too.
Absolutely. You can hear Frank Miramati's dulcet tones in the background as they run the second at Santa Anita. Let's take a look at this field. Just a group of six. In this group, this is a starter optional event going three quarters. What do you see there, Rich?
Well, I know when I did the handicapping of this last night, I like the one horse, Daddy's Ruby, private purchase by Peter Miller, picks up Flavion Pratt, but right now is getting a mid-pack trip down on the rail.
You had... Daddy's Ruby at 7-5 in here. This one for Peter Miller and Flavion Pratt.
Yeah, this horse debuted at the Golden Gate Fields and won a maiden race, maiden special, very impressively, and then was privately purchased. So that was a pretty interesting selection. Didn't pay a whole lot, but still, good spot for Peter Miller to get the first win under his shedrow.
Second race at Santa Anita. In fact, let's take a reset here and take a look at where we stand. Tampa now. Boy, they're just slapping one after another up. This is that point in the day when you literally have to just have your head on a swivel.
This is the Manhattan traffic jam part of the day where cars are coming from everywhere.
Big time. Tampa is through eight races to this point. Laurel is through eight races. Gulfstream is through seven races. So they've got five to run, and we're 6 minutes to post for it. This has got to be the sprint race with Frank's Rockette, 1-9 on the board in that. This is what the Hurricane Birdie, I think.
Wow, you know, just on the principle alone, you got to try to beat a horse like that, don't you?
No, I don't. What's your Brian? What's your philosophy when you look up and you see a 1-9 shot? I mean, is it worth it?
Well, obviously, you're not playing a one.
No, of course not. But I mean, how often do you look? And I suppose part of it's the time of day as well.
Yeah, no, I'd forget about this race. Actually, I really think Chad will likely run 1-2 anyways, maybe 1-2-3.
I'm talking about the 1-9 shot at Gulfstream in the Hurricane Birdie. You've got the Bill Mott veteran mare. Yeah, the Gulfstream A. They are moving the toward the gate at Tampa for the Hillsboro, and then we will be able at Tampa to look forward to the 2 3-year-old races, the Florida Oaks and the Tampa Bay Derby, and we'll give those a heavy consideration. You know, and I also, Rich, I want to go back. Lansdowne, the very nice $30 winner.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to go back and see if there was anything, you know, what was there in him. And to be honest, he did. I'm looking at the sheets. He did have a race two back, Lansdowne, that was very competitive. A win, non-winners of two lifetime. Then he tried a starter allowance. So basically, he kind of returned to condition. Here, you don't have to. don't.
Yeah,
don't,
I was flipping back and forth trying to find it.
No, the Gulfstream race.
No chance. Beating this horse.
I don't even consider. I would never consider playing the race.
There you go. I do see Rich Averill's got a horse in here. We had dinner with Rich the other night as part of the big group that Clocker John put together. And Rich,
you know, just a simple comment about Lansdowne.
Yeah.
The fact that you know, the last race where the horse lost by 14 lengths was in a starter allowance 10,000, and probably faced a tougher group then than faced today. And if you look at the race two back, this horse easily won a claiming 20. That's exactly what this condition was.
Exactly.
Although it was non-winners
three.
Of three,
yeah.
Said non-winners of two, but a lot of the similar type animals. So could have. Could have easily gotten back there. You just had to draw a line through that last race.
Yeah, he was far from impossible, the winner,
yes.
The 14-1 winner at Oakland.
Oh, no, he was in the race the last time. I think you picked the 8 and I picked the 12. Both the 8 and the 12 beat him in the last race,
yep.
But not by much. He was on the front end then, and he backed off late. And you'll see that the Jordan horse and the, I think it was the 8 horse that you'd liked in that, the 10 horse.
Yep.
They were both in this title shot, went past them, and that. I guess I didn't. He was quite a playable horse if you liked the other two.
Yeah, agreed. And that race two back, more than fast. And I'll tell you what else, Arietta got back aboard him.
Yeah, you like that. You know, that's an angle I like to follow, is when the last jockey to win on the horse goes back on him. You know, it's pretty basic, pretty simple, but it works an awful lot because these jockey agents are pretty sharp.
That's a horse now that's won twice. This is a horse they claim for 10,000 off Dwayne Lucas and Mr. Horton. And actually, it's a Fipke bred Super Saver colt. This is not a gelding. Not that this horse is a stallion prospect. And it's very surprising, actually. Lucas is the biggest advocate in the game of cutting horses, of gelding. He says that 98% should be gelded. Mm-hmm. And yet, this is a horse that when he came to him and when he dropped him down, I'm shocked that they didn't geld him at some point.
He didn't cut him. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
Very, very strange, actually. Anyhow, this is a horse now that's won twice for Tammy Hornsby
good for her.
And Francisco Arietta. What a nice claim for 10,000. And of course, the purse here is 31,000. So this horse has made probably three times what they paid for the 10,000.
You know, Steve, they're starting to load the Tampa race, but the other Chad Brown, the 4 Rugier, is
that's a 5-to-1 price. If you have to bet the race, I think the 4 and the 4 might have run. He run in the E.P. Taylor up in Canada. He run in the Beverly D. and didn't disgrace himself. He might be as good as the 6 in that.
Exactly.
I felt that way.
On the odds, you definitely. I fully expect to likely run 1-2.
Well, I wasn't as convinced of that, to be honest. I between Cherie's horse and others, I thought there were a couple of horses that. You absolutely could have utilized. Let me pull back here and get you the feed again. Wow, something's. Give me a second because the screen was flashing repeatedly. And here we go. All right, stay a second. No, same thing. All right, hold on. We're gonna have to do some. Ambient.
Scottish Star continues on the half mile board. Lead still 2. Chantisara stalking and tethering from 2nd. Temple City Terrace, surprisingly, they're 3rd, 4th. Rugier is 5th, going to be 3 deep as they run toward that far turn. Gansmission is out of pass. California Queen down at the back. Set up coverage is 4 lengths as they go from the far.
Sitting up a little bit closer now from second. Ambition starting to wind up on the outside. Down along the fence, surprisingly just going to need some room. Scottish Star is still just in front. Shantasar up on the outside. Those two by the 316s. Surprisingly dives toward the inside. In behind Temple City Terror, Rougier going to look for a seam down at the fence. Final 16th to go. Shantasar just in front. Digging in, Scottish Star is second. Shantasar, Scottish Star, surprisingly down the outside. Shantasar and I right going clear. They're going to win the Hillsboro length and a half. Second was close. Might have been Scottish Star over, surprisingly. There's a photo there for a second.
Well, Shantasara ultimately prevails here, but not without a.
Well, they went a slow pace, so that's why the seven stays in. Rogier's race, I'm sure, was a setup for a longer distance than that. Longer distance. She's run okay at mile and an eighth in that, but. I think that's a prep for her.
Let's take a look here, and I will bring you the call of the Hurricane Birdie.
A point, Edgar Perez, and fire on time. They lead by just a neck. Up on the outside, our audio's jersey keeps the heat on second. It's a perfect spot for Frank's Rockette. She's third as the big favorite. Two better than Dry Faros, who's up the fourth. Then Diamond Wow and Colorful Mischief. 22-2 for the opening quarter, 3 furlongs to race. Fire on time, leads by a length and a half. Our audio's jersey is second. Alvarado starts to ask Frank's Rockette to do some work. She's third and gaining ground. Up to fourth, Dry Faros, then Colorful Mischief as they round the far turn. Here's the move from Frank's Rockette, and she's front and center with a power sweep to the lead. There's a quarter of a mile left to go in the Hurricane Birdie, and Frank's Rockette is under cruise control with a 4-length lead. Our audio's jersey battling fire on time, then Dry Faros and Colorful Mischief with an eighth of a mile to go. Take a look at her, folks. She's a high-quality filly. She's Frank's Rockette, and she's going to win the Hurricane Birdie in style. Geared down and posing for the picture, she won by 7. Our audio's jersey was second. Dry Faros ran third. Colorful Mischief is fourth in 116-4.
Well, an easy as a 1-to-whatever shot is supposed to win.
Yeah. There's a reason he's 2-to-5 there. I didn't think it was really a competition.
No, this was a field that she overwhelmed.
I couldn't find any. No. It's supposed to run close, and he's eased up at the wire, and he still wins by close to 10.
The veteran mare that has been so productive for Bill Mott and Frank Fletcher. Good job. Nice, very nice. And you know, there's no reason not to. And I should ask you, Brian, have you owned any over the years? Maybe some harness?
I've owned 5% of a horse back a few years ago in that.
14 minutes now to race 8 at Aqueduct.
She won a fair bit of money, but I found out how much, you know.
The bills are.
The bills, between the bills and the cost to enter races and so on and that. She won close to a couple hundred thousand in that.
Very nice.
And you know, once you start paying stake, she was an Ontario sired horse.
Sure.
And once you start paying stakes fees and so on and that, you don't end up with a lot of profit. And that sort of decided me, you know, you have one that makes 200,000 and you don't really make a lot of money. What are you going to do if they don't make any money in that? You're just going to keep paying. So
yeah.
I think you need deeper pockets than I have in that.
It's one of the reasons that you see so many groups together.
The good thing about betting horses is that a player can throw the ticket away after the race and forget about it. If you own them, you still got to feed them, train them, whatever else in that.
That's for sure. Jim Goodman joins us, of course, from Keeneland. And Jim, nice to be here together with you and doing some work helping NTRA.
Yes, I am. I didn't qualify, so I always volunteer. If she wants some help, but I'm always available, and I'm doing a little bit more this time. I'm auditing because they lost their CFO, so I am doing a little bit. Amber left and went to another job, so I'm doing a little bit more, but I was on the mandatory contest committee, so please don't complain about the mandatories. Friday was tough. Friday getting mandatories that day was tough. Today was easy. And unfortunately, Santa Anita's off the turf, but that race has held up pretty well.
Yeah,
only had three.
You
scratches.
Got hurt on Friday because there were scratches in races, which there's nothing you can do about.
Right? We did, and that's something that you can't control. But we tried to get races that there weren't heavy favorites. We left off Santa Anita on Friday, which was a good thing because we wound up canceling, so we didn't have any chaos there. But I think the mandatories today are very good, and I think there's some chances for some prices. We already had one at 14-1 in that Oakland race. Yeah. So I think we did a better job today. There are a lot more choices. Friday racing was tough this time.
How many, Jim, in terms of your other hat at Keeneland, how many Keeneland qualifiers are among the crowd today?
I think we had 26 qualifiers.
Nice.
I have four tournaments, and so I usually do 10 on each of the big tournaments and two or three on the others. So I think we had 26.
Nice.
Yeah, we were second. I think Brian from Monmouth had 45 or 50. He has a lot more tournaments.
Well, he runs, and it's a year-long process.
Yes.
And of course, you've got your season. I mean, you.
Yeah, and I don't do anything off season.
Right.
I used to do some simulcast tournaments way back in the day, and I think Brian was remembering 550 people going for three spots, paying $100 a piece, and only three spots because there was no online at that time.
Sure.
I remember, like in 2006, 2007, there was one year that they actually had a waiting list. That I wasn't aware of it until Jim told me the other day. We were discussing it only 600 to get in, but he just let the other 20 in anyways in that, he told me. I sort of can't remember that, but...
It was amazing.
It was really, like, I think it was in November, so it's getting in the year, and people come from everywhere around the area on that. Always the next day they had one at Turfway, and that, so a lot of people, they do the trip and that, they
sure.
They do Keeneland. You're looking at a person that did. You go to Keeneland, and then the Sunday you'd play at Turfway. And
remember, the Turfway contest was handicapping on crack. Turfway, you had to bet every single race.
That's right.
You couldn't skip a race, and you'd be sitting there looking at those 27-inch Sony TVs up there hanging on the wall, and, oh, crap, Tampa's going off, Aqueduct's going off. I'm going to miss Gulfstream because if you missed, you just missed an opportunity.
In the Turfway contest, they didn't count losers. Like, all you had, as long as you kept your bankroll going, you played, there was always about 40 races, and you play every race, and you just hope you don't run out of money, because if you win a race and you get, say, 15 to win and 7 to place, you get 22 on your score.
Yeah, you bet it back.
If you lose the next race, 2 win place and that, you don't lose. Your 22 still stays up there. It doesn't count against you in that. So losers really didn't count. So you just kept trying to pile on and bet as many races as you could.
I love it. I love it. I've heard those discussed. Jim, I've got the Aqueduct 8th, and let's look to the Aqueduct 8th, Brian. And Rich was here. Now he's disappeared. Yeah, I know. I turned around, he was gone. We've got about 8 minutes, so let's get out in front of the next mandatory, and then we'll take a break after this mandatory at Aqueduct, 2 hours into the show already on this Saturday, and we'll have a chance to really sort of a halfway point, get a feel for the way the day is unfolding. What do you think, Jim?
I thought this was a great race, and we like to use Aqueduct when we can, and because we got a lot of New York players. Yeah, so Bachok is very, very kind with his accommodations in New Orleans.
Were you in the Pentalba?
I was in New Orleans. I was.
You were. Yeah. I've been in the Pentalba.
It's a beautiful place, and that's my wife's happy place.
But Tina loves it too.
Yeah, it's great.
Just be thankful we don't have to clean it, because those 30-foot ceilings, I don't know how they. It's unbelievable. No. Never seen anything like it.
I always ask him, can we do a little bit more? And he said, no, that's fine. So, anyway. Yeah, I like this race. This was one of the races that Brian and I both agreed that it was a good mandatory race to put in. I like Celestial Moon here. I thought that that race back in Aqueduct on a good track, very impressive. Breaking his maiden. I love Bill Mott. Bill Mott is the most consistent trainer that I watch consistently, and I think he does a great job. Lescano takes this mount. Good substitute for Alvarado, and I think Celestial Moon is going to set a good trip inside. Took a big step up last time out, and I don't have a problem betting him back off that maiden win. Majority partner for Linda Rice has a big shot. Of course, Chad Brown, reserve currency. You've got to use him and Davis. But I don't think Celestial Moon might be a little bit higher than that 7-2 morning line. And if you can get 4-1, 5-1 on this
9-2 right now.
Yeah, 9-2. So, I thought the race was extremely well balanced. I think you'd make a case for about 5 or 6 horses. That's exactly what we look for in a mandatory, because we don't want a heavy favorite in a mandatory. Just kind of takes the fun out of it. So I think we got a good mandatory coming up.
Well, in the charity tournament, in the NTRA charity tournament, I landed on the 2 as well. Brian, what are you doing?
What am I doing? This is one of the races that I thought was impossible when I looked at it last night, and that the Mott horse has just broke his maiden, the Brown horse has just broke his maiden, and that what I've seen today on the track is that there's a lot of speed in that.
Mm-hmm.
The latest traction that's raced at Oaklawn, optional race at 6, has been scratched at Oaklawn.
Take the 6 out of the Oaklawn 6, and our friend Dave Kaiser letting us know just some light drizzle at Oaklawn. Actually even the fog has cleared up a little bit, but they can't get through a Saturday without weather. It's unbelievable.
No, you have to handicap Oaklawn for an off track. I don't think they've had a fast track on a weekend this year.
No, it's astounding.
I originally last night I the 2 was one of the horses in that. But the more I look at now and seeing what's happened on the track today, I think the Mike Maker horse might be the horse.
Maker was my alternate.
The only problem with him, he's got a second-itis in that. He's run 10 times and he's second.
I think he's a perfect key under. I love horses that run second 4 or 5 times out of 10. Because there's something there that they're just not, can't get over the top.
And then, of course, you fold in, you want a horse that's going to clunk up for third. You find a 25-1 shot that is not a win candidate, but a horse that's going to be at the bottom, the Ken Kirchner tri-key horse.
I like that. I like a horse to key second with all with second, all with one horse with all, if you can afford it, or mostly 4 or 5 horses on top, single with all. I think it's the best trifecta anywhere.
I think we have actually talked about it, but it's been a while. What is your go-to bet, during a nice afternoon?
Unfortunately, my go-to bet is a pick 5, but I don't recommend that for people because it's very difficult. But it's the darling bet right now.
That's,
and
sure,
it's our fastest growing bet. It's a 50-cent minimum, and you can cover a lot of combinations for a reasonable amount. But you start firing at pick 5s, and you hit 4 out of 5 a lot. If you think about how tough a pick 6 is, a pick 5 at a track like Keeneland, a track like Saratoga, very, very difficult. And so I fall back on exactas and tries. And I like daily doubles. I like, if I've got a horse that I really can key in a daily double, say I like a horse in the second race, I'll do a double first and second, then second and third. So nothing that exotic. Pick 5s, exactas, and tries. I love pick 5s, though. It's nice to hit. I don't know if you saw, but one of our players here had a chance to sweep the pool at Turfway the other night. He hit for $39,000. And he had an interesting ticket. He had he had 2 singles in a pick 5, but he had an all that caught a $160 horse.
Unbelievable.
And people fuss about ticket structure.
Right.
I don't have a problem with all.
Rick Hammer, especially Breeders' Cup Day and big Saturdays, Hammer liberally hits the all button. My man Gus Alonso. Mm-hmm. Gus is not afraid to hit the all button. I'll give you an example. The Oaks Derby double, Barbaro was his absolute
lock of the day.
The weekend, he was on Barbaro for the Derby, and he hit the all button in the Oaks for the Oaks Derby and caught forever Lemons Forever.
Lemons Forever. Oh.
Longest price in the history of the
Huge
Oaks.
Price, yeah. I think anybody that takes all you get criticized a lot since you can't handicap. Well, if you have a race where you can't narrow it down below five horses, you don't have a clue. So many times you get beat that way.
No, I agree.
I think a pick five, you've got to take a stand on a couple of races, and if you can afford an all, I think it's a good bet.
Looking up at Oaklawn, and this is a maiden group. This actually, did we discuss this yesterday? That's the seventh is the allowance with Barber Road. This is a group.
This is a wide open group.
Yeah, I did actually. This
two favorites at 5-2. One of them's on the lead, but got a lot of company.
Well, they're going to the short porch and the 5-2 favorite, but you got a 16-1 that is trying to chase him going in and out, and just is not going to get there. 3-5 in the Oaklawn sixth, and well, some people will get a decent place price out of that.
Jim Goodman, Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly. Jim Goodman, Hall of Famer. Yeah. Talk about that.
I'm going to put that on my business card.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. A couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, they started letting tournament managers be eligible for the Hall of Fame. And so I told Keith when he called me with the good news before they announced it, I said, you certainly didn't put me in on my tournament prowess in the NHC. I've qualified five straight years, but I never got to the finals. So I appreciate the fact that I've got so many players here that recognize what we do for them at Keeneland. And hopefully they pay that back to me in forms of respect. And I have a really good product to sell. You've been to Keeneland. Brian loves Keeneland. I think Keeneland's his favorite track outside of Woodbine. I'm not sure, but
I can't say anything about Woodbine on this thing, or they'll throw me.
let me pause for a minute. Actually, give me that if you would, Brian. Let me. Yeah. All right, let me borrow this if I could. They're getting loaded. Chris Griffin will bring you this this mandatory.
All set. And they're off. Broken a very even line. Down towards the inside, it's Majority Partner who's got early speed. In between horses, Lenny Sima is right there as well. And up on the far outside, there's Patient Capital in the early mix. It's going to be Majority Partner and Patient Capital out of the chute. It's a moderate pace early. There's 6%. Kendra Carmouche out in the center of the racetrack has now taken third, is losing some ground with Lenny Sima. Then Shipsational, who's passed by Celestial Moon, who's now in the fifth spot. And the trailer, Reserve Currency, is encouraged to move forward from the back end of the field, is now 7 lengths the trailer. It's Majority Partner. Partner in front, Majority Partner in Jason Pius, they're up by a neck. It's mild pressure here from Patient Capital, who's up alongside here from second. They're at 23, and 2 for the opening quarter mile. 6% is dribbling along from third, not cutting in the margin yet. Celestial Moon is progressing at the rail as they've got less than a half mile to go. They went 46 and 4. For that half mile time, Majority Partner is still there. Patient Capital is a clear second. Celestial Moon is now in full gear, is making up some ground, is traveling there with Lenny Sima as 6% starts to drop back from the back. Reserve Currency's got to go right now, is still 7 lengths. Has the back end of the field with Shipsational. Majority Partner approaches a quarter mile left to go, is still in front, is drifting well off the rail, and Majority Partner is about to get the cue to kick for home. Patient Capital continues to pursue here up on the outside. Lenny Sima's got some momentum as well. It's Majority Partner who's trying to find a final furlong here and gut it out. Celestial Moon is right there. Patient Capital starts to lunge as well. They approach the final 16th, 4 across the racetrack, and here comes Celestial Moon. Celestial Moon to the outside of Majority Partner who tries to come back. Celestial Moon, Majority Partner, Celestial Moon gets the victory over Majority Partner. Then came a tight photo there with Patient Capital and late running Reserve Currency. And woman.
Wow, pretty much doped this out about as well as it could have been.
We did. Yeah. I was Celestial Moon was struggling down the stretch because I was riding that horse very hard. And 230 pounds doesn't help on the back of a horse.
Four to one, nice ride. Jose Lascano for Mott, and Linda Rice's majority partner ran a valiant race. The favorite,
the seventh, he's third today. He got rid of Seconitis. He ain't gonna win, I don't think. He's got no pump.
Well, you got a 4-1 winner, so a $10 winner, and majority partner 5-1. Figure about $4 place price with the favorite off the board, or not off the board, but third. So 1-2-7-5 in the eighth at the Big A. The correction is next. The stake. Jim, finish up more about. Yeah, Keeneland, we're just a couple of weeks away from.
We are
at this point.
Yeah, I get to go back and rest for about 2 days. But yeah, we've got a great meet coming up. We open up on the 7th, and we open up with the Ashland Stakes and then the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes. Hoping to see Forte back there where he's 2-for-2. Mr. Pletcher has a decision to make to keep him in Florida or bring him back to Kentucky, and we kind of hope he brings him back to Kentucky to get him acclimated to the climate for the Kentucky Derby. So looking forward to the Bluegrass Stakes, looking forward to just a great meet. We've increased our purses again. We got a couple of bigger races, and spring in Kentucky is the place you want to be. I could live a lot of places in the after I retire. I'm going to stay in Kentucky in April, and I wouldn't rather be anywhere else.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Kentucky, and I've had a granddaughter there now, so I've got to stay. But I do like the southern climes a little bit better in the wintertime. But I can't imagine somebody that's a horse player not wanting to be in Kentucky in April and October.
It's amazing.
Saratoga in the summer.
That's it. And maybe California.
Oh, yeah.
Well, normally California in the winter. This was not the greatest winter.
Right.
This inquiry, by the way, a couple of things
happened.
It's been
a long time.
This is a long inquiry, but it's over second and third. So the horses, anybody that had the 16-1 shot that was second, they're sweating out some place money.
Sure.
We should mention, in the Laurel Nightcap, you had a big priced winner, a $28 winner at Laurel in the Nightcap. Cash Kid came through late. As soon as this thing goes official in New York, not big numbers here, but obviously mandatories, everybody's got to play, and we'll see what it did. In the meantime, no change near the top of the leaderboard. Among the leaderboard, actually, Jim, any names that jump out at you that you can tell us about?
Well, of course, Francis.
We talked yesterday.
So consistent.
Amazing.
It seems to be a pattern. The person that does the best on the first day seems to continue that. Now, we've had a few. Brian, when he won it, was lights out first day, but second day it wasn't the same, was it? You had a great first day,
yes,
but your second day was a struggle, and you hung on for the win.
Yeah, well,
Francis has already gotten almost as much as he had yesterday.
Yeah,
he got 269. He's almost double.
It's amazing,
and he's going to be in absolute.
I had my lead on the first day. I had 232, and Gary Johnson was sitting second at 159. So, you know, I had a substantial lead and so on in that. What hurt me the second day was that I had a handicap for, if you remember, they canceled, I think, New York, Laurel, and what?
The snowstorm. They moved.
116-1 versus another 16.
They moved the one up at the Oak Lawn sixth, and as a result, some people are going to. It's not going to be a lot of money, but it'll be $8, $9, $10.
Oh, well, $10 is a lot.
Yeah. No doubt.
When you look at the end of the day here, $10 could be the difference in 15 places. So the difference in making the cut, not making the cut. That's a huge one. That's a tough beat for somebody if they had the five.
Well, a couple of movers, A.J. Benton, who was about 14th, 15th, he moved back into the top 10. Of course, was overnight. He was sitting second. A.J. gets up to 168.30. Doc Bustani
Static at 269. Paul Kalia, 197. No change. Eric Archer, 191. Adam Lewis, 178. Kirk Rockwell, 177. Steve Nemitz, 170. There's AJ, then Greg Gass, Jeff Vandry, and Evan Littman. The top of the board is
well, if you took away, it's kind of like a golf tournament. You got one guy shooting 16 under, everybody else is 8 under. That's
yeah.
what the leaderboard looks like right now, because he's got a, what, a $72 lead?
Yep.
But then between second and 10th is only about $30. So it's a great leaderboard. I think Mr. Benton, the one that you mentioned, he's an extremely good player.
Unbelievable.
Very consistent, very confident in his picks.
Yep.
He'll tell you, he said, I'm going to do well tomorrow, and he usually backs it up. Francis is having a great 2 days. There's no doubt about that.
Magic.
So sometimes you're hot and you just continues.
You gotta roll
that's,
with it.
That's a substantial lead. I think his lead just dropped to $66. Who's that at 203.40 in second?
We've got 10 minutes to the – let's get the – here's what we'll do. We'll take the Tampa 10th. Casey, are we okay to go another 15 minutes, or should we take the break here? You tell me. We and come back your call. Well, I think we can stay. All right. All right, you know what then? Case, let's take the break. It's just 2.5 minutes. Let's take the break here, and then we will come back and talk about this fun Florida Oaks field of 12, all right? We're about halfway on this day two moving day at the NHC. Jim Goodman joining us, Brian Troop, Rich Eng. Stay with us. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start for the University of Arizona's racetrack industry program.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
And
horse racing, handicapping,